Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Blizzard Watch podcast. I'm Matt, your host. With me this week are my fantastic co-hosts and co-conspirators in this crazy thing we do, Liz Harper, the EIC of the site, and Joe Perez, the backbone of all of our video and audio efforts. How y'all doing?
Howdy!
It is a week, how but I am doing? Here. It's been a while since we've had Prospector Matt. It's been a while.
I mean, being from Texas, I'm just obligated to answer everything with howdy.
It's really funny. My Latin professor in college was from Texas. And when he was doing the plural you in Latin, he would go y'all. And that's where I got it from. And he used to speak Latin with a Texas accent. And when he'd get upset, he would speak with more of a Texas accent. So when he was in the Vatican, he was talking to a cardinal from the, you know, when he was in the actually looking at the Vatican Museum. And at one point he and the cardinal had started talking, and the cardinal at one point turned to him and said, "Wait a minute, what language are we speaking?" Because they were speaking Latin. The cardinal knew so many languages, he didn't remember which one he was speaking. And that the accent was what threw him. So we told him, "Wait a minute, no, that's Latin. He shouldn't have said that word like that." But anyway, getting on to, we got a busy week, so we're just going to kind of move into like all this stuff that is going on. Liz generally writes a nice overview of all of it. So Hearthstone first, because I'm terrible at remembering Hearthstone, but I did remember Hearthstone this week. I did mention this.
You did.
We've got the Maw in Disorder mini set, which is 35 new cards. It's basically Sylvanas on trial. Am I correct?
I mean, it's a Law and Order spoof. The whole thing is a Law and Order spoof. It's, you know, okay, you have Jailer as kind of the judge and Sylvanas is on trial, but it's like, it's all an excuse to make a big Law and Order joke set, except it's Maw and Disorder.
I'm just hoping that you get the chong chong every time a card gets played.
That would be great. I haven't logged on and gotten the set yet, but that would be perfect.
So we also got patch 2.24.4, which was the one that actually has the mercenaries changes and stuff.
Well, they always release a patch right before the mini set, and that technically the patch includes all the mini set stuff, but it's never just one thing with Hearthstone. You know, Hearthstone is like 28 games in a trench coat, and so every Hearthstone patch is like 28 games in a trench coat as well.
Such a really good way to put it.
Yeah, but it's like the only thing that's really been hyped is the mini set, but there are also like a dozen new mercenaries. Sylvanas is coming back to the battlegrounds. She had been out of rotation for a while. And I think the most interesting thing is there is a change where low-ranked players playing ranked games will face up against AI opponents rather than other players. I'm reading this as that if you're low-ranked in Hearthstone, like me, I'm terrible, then you're more likely to come up against an AI than a human opponent. And if you do that, you may be more likely to actually win some of those early matches to help you get into the game and figure out how to play and maybe get better. I don't know. I've been playing Hearthstone for a long time. I don't know if I'm much better than I was on day one, but here we are. And also, Hearthstone currently has a weekly quest, which is win 5 ranked matches. If you're not a really good Hearthstone player, if you don't have a really good deck, that can be really hard and time-consuming. Well, maybe not hard. You'll get it eventually, but it can be really time-consuming. So I think this is really interesting. And this was buried. This was, like, at the end of, like, 5,000 words of patch notes. This was just right there at the bottom. And I think that could be a really big, really interesting change.
Well, then, interesting. I don't know a lot about it, but I do think the MMR change is interesting because Blizzard does a lot of games with an MMR system of one kind or another. Matchmaking is a big deal for several Blizzard games at this point. It's Overwatch's whole thing. Yeah, but it's Overwatch's whole thing. It's a big part of World of Warcraft PvP. So that's interesting and something to watch for to see how it works in future games. I'm going to skip for a second to Diablo Immortal instead of talking about Wrath, just because you were talking about how they buried that at the end of a long post. And yesterday, Diablo Immortal put out a post that was like everything in it was buried at the end of a long post because the post was enormous. It's like, oh, yeah, we're doing this new patch, and it's going to have a bunch of new content, like an entirely new system for warbands. And like, I'm like, what? And then they're like, oh, and by the way, we're completely changing how often you can actually get the legendary crests for, you know, if you want to run Elder Rifts for gear, instead of getting like 3 in a month, you can now get 6 in a month. And it's like, what? Like, that's good, but it's not good enough, guys.
And also, it was really buried down in the patch
really,
notes.
Really, really buried.
I wonder how many people even realize this is in the game because it was so hidden in the patch notes.
Yeah, it was, and that wasn't even it. Like the entire change to warbands was like kind of buried too. And the fact that there's like the change to warbands includes a new system where you're like conquering this outpost, the silent monastery thing, and you might actually get to turn it into your guild housing type situation, your warband home.
It's a Castle Cyangar,
something like that. Yeah. And it's like, you're going to get to turn it into your headquarters. Like, and what? You put that back here?
I should add in for people who aren't familiar with Diablo Immortal that warbands are small, sort of like guilds. They have a maximum of 8 players. So it gives it kind of a different dynamic. And you just go to this castle and you defeat the monsters and it's like, okay, this is our house now. And if I'm understanding it correctly, there will be like different rooms in your new castle. And it's like the person who's assigned to each room gets different benefits.
So like, Diablo Immortal gets player housing before World of Warcraft.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's the player housing I was trying to get them to do back in 2015. Remember it's when like, I used to constantly say that you should be able to take over a place after you beat up the monsters?
Yeah.
You just did that.
So I keep looking at Diablo Immortal and I see all these great MMO features and I'm like, I want this in Warcraft right now. Let's take this feature and rip it out and put it in Warcraft and that would be great.
It's not like you're shy about taking features from Diablo, for God's sake.
Hi, Transmog.
Hi, Transmog. Hi, World Quests. Hi, you know, geez. Yeah. Just steal this too. Mythic Plus Dungeons are calling. They have affixes now. Yeah, right there. Do that.
Let's do this. Let's get this in Warcraft because it sounds amazing, fun, interactive. And one of the things I feel about Warcraft right now is guilds are kind of like a little tiny itty bitty bit neglected. Like, I don't think we've gotten...
Have they done anything for guilds in 6 years?
They ruined the guild pain. I mean, that's something they did for guilds. They ruined it.
It's two guilds. They did it two guilds, not four guilds.
It's like there have not been major changes to guilds in so many years, and there are so few tools for, like, organizing in-game. And, you know, if you want to run a guild, you practically, you know, you have to build up your own infrastructure to manage things. It's like there's nothing in-game to help you or support you in any way.
Like, we have to do all of our stuff through Discord. Almost all of it, exclusively.
Well, I mean, you get guilds with web pages. And of course, like we have, Joe and I are in a guild together. And our guild, you know, you put in an app to get into the guild. And of course, that is through our website, through Google Forms. And it's like, You can do that in the game. There is like a place you can advertise your guild and you can take applications, I believe, but it's so non-granular. Like the tools are so basic. These are tools straight out of the year 2000 and they've just never gotten the update and overhaul that they kind of need to be useful in a modern context. So yeah, let's get some cool stuff for guilds in the game, like a castle we can take over and make our own and hopefully decorate. That's totally what I want out of a castle.
I don't disagree. I think that that is a good idea, quite frankly. But yeah, that's coming to Diablo Immortal. I already mentioned the Warbound.
That's live. That one's live today.
Yeah. So almost everything in this post felt like it was buried after the, you know, we're going to make some changes. And then they just didn't tell. It was just like, boom, all this stuff hit you. It was really crazy. But Diablo 2 as well has actually had, the patch is already out, right? Or is it kind of coming till October 6th? I thought the patch was already out because Terror Zones
are
live
now,
right?
Yeah, the patch is out, but you are correct. The latter season resets on October 6th.
Okay, so I'm going to start with explaining Terror Zones really fast. In Diablo 2 Resurrected, and just like in Diablo 2, there are acts that structure the game's story. Much Diablo 3 did the same thing. Each act has zones in it, which are more like what you'd consider like a subzone. If you use World of Warcraft as an example, World of Warcraft zones are about the same size as act areas. The subzones that are called zones in Diablo 2 are getting this kind of demon invasion type thing where every so often you sign up for this. It does not automatically start in your Diablo 2 playthrough. But if you sign up for it, instead of having to constantly farm, say, Baal and Mephisto and Diablo to get certain drops and level yourself up, because once you get done with the main story, you're not going to even be close to level 99. Not even close. So people are like having to farm and farm and farm to get to level 99 and then you get, you know, the proper gear. They've put in the Terror Zones as a way to do something else. Whereas instead of going and farming the same boss 12 times, you can instead go into the Terror Zone. All the mobs vary in difficulty between 2 levels higher than you up to, for a boss, 5 levels higher than you. No matter what level you are, they're always higher level than you. And that way they give more XP, but they're also more of a challenge to kill. So if you're looking for a challenge, if you're looking for something that isn't just farming the same 3 bosses over and over again, now with Terror Zones, you can do that. And I think they spawn like once an hour.
Once an hour in a different zone out of a, there are only certain zones they can spawn in, but it's a lot of zones.
Yeah. There's a list in the article we put up and basically they rotate through all these different zones and you can go find the zone where they're doing it and just go fight a bunch of demons. And it's sort of their answer to what the adventure mode did for Diablo 3. Instead of doing that, they're just bringing this mechanic in to Diablo 2. Joe, you played a lot of Diablo 2 back in the day. What do you think of the Terror Zones?
I think this is great, especially for the, we talked about this before and this is something I will continue to say that I'm good with until they do something awful, but I really like the idea of having Diablo 2 be redone and having Diablo 2 remastered being an ongoing thing where new things are added as they start cleaning stuff up to give players a better experience. I'm perfectly okay with this. Like, I think this is fantastic. I think it adds another dynamic that you have an option of participating with. It's not something you are forced to do. So that's always a good thing as well. So I'm all for it. Like, I think this is fantastic. This is exactly the type of stuff that I've been looking for.
All right. Liz, do you have anything to add before we move on?
I mean, I just agree. It's the variety because all Diablo games get kind of samey after a while. You're going to smash the same demon's head over and over and over. They need spicing it up and giving you an option to do it or not do it. That's great.
I'm actually really interested to see how Diablo 2 is basically, it's not a museum piece and never was. It's been getting developed like it was a live game from the moment it came out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really interesting. And we're probably going to talk about that again because we've got comments about Wrath Classic to do. But first, I'm going to move to Overwatch because this is the one that I know the least about because I haven't been keeping up with it as much. But from what I understand, the things that you have listed here, the Overwatch credits with Last Chance, which is basically the original, the older Overwatch loot box and currency system.
So
the loot box is already gone, but the currency is still there. They're getting rid of it. Elizabeth,
it's more complicated than that. This
super
is one of those
needlessly
this is a needlessly complicated thing. They call it a credits last chance event, but actually credits continue to exist in Overwatch 2 and you can still use them. But I believe the differentiator here is you may not be able to get the skins that are on sale now. They may go into the vault and you may not see them for a long time. You may not have the credits to buy them. We don't know. It's a mystery. So if you want, if you have credits, if you like the skins in the store, go buy the thing.
So that's happening up until the 2nd of October. Then the new game, Overwatch 2, launches on October 4th.
I still have a hard time calling it a new game. I'm not even going to lie.
It's, yeah. I mean, it's like an expansion. It's like, WoW patch 10.0 will be, it kind of overhauls some stuff. It's not even going to be as big as a WoW expansion. It's doing some stuff, but it's the same game, and Overwatch will just become Overwatch 2. It's kind of like a content patch that updates everything. It doesn't feel like a new game at all.
Which, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I wanted to ask this question to you guys, because I think I went back and I couldn't find it, and I don't know if I'm just like, this is a thing that happened in my brain and nowhere else, but I thought when they announced Overwatch 2 all that long while ago, they flat out said that Overwatch 1 wasn't going to go away, that players could still continue to enjoy it. Am I misremembering that?
That is, I sort of recall that as well, but I couldn't find it if I went looking.
That's
for
what
it,
they said think. When I was at BlizzCon, because I remember, because I was literally sitting about a foot and a half away from the dude.
And now with the new launch, they're basically like, because they're doing the overhaul and the content update, it's basically just overhauling the game so that it is only over the new version of Overwatch and the old one is gone for good.
Yeah, but I mean,
well, you could argue it that way, or you could argue that in fact it's just Overwatch still. It's not an entirely new game. So yeah, it didn't go anywhere. I mean, it's like being like saying, you know, when Wrath of the Lich King came out, a lot of the original Azeroth, you know, you couldn't do Nexramas anymore because it was in Northrend. Or when Cataclysm came out, suddenly the world got changed, but it was still World of Warcraft. It wasn't a new game. I don't know. I'm really baffled by what they're doing with this game, but I didn't want to complain, so I'm trying not to.
Well, I'm not complaining. I'm just asking questions, right? Because like, there's a lot of this I just don't understand.
I mean, that's because it doesn't make a lot of sense, and their messaging has changed over the course of this time. Like originally, Overwatch 2, a big part of it was going to be PvE mode. Overwatch was getting this PvE stuff, and now that's not happening until next year. And we don't even have a date for when it's happening next year, and we don't know how it's going to be released. Is it going to be one big purchase? Or are we going to have to unlock it with a battle pass? There's no information.
And originally, I remember PvE being the big selling point of, like, it was going to be the big launch thing that distinguished Overwatch 2 versus Overwatch 1. And I remember it, like, it was supposed to be, like, Overwatch 2 was going to be mainly PvE, and that PvP was going to be, you know, Overwatch 1's territory. I don't know. Like, the other thing that really...
But let's be upfront here. That was a lot of people who aren't there anymore.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But also, like, I'm curious, because the other thing that they talked about doing was, like, making a whole new game engine for Overwatch 2, which seems to be gone now. So, like, I don't know. I'm with Liz. Like, a lot of the messaging has changed, which allowable, right? Like, things happen. I get that. Yeah. But, like, the messaging has been so inconsistent.
Yeah, and of course, they've had a lot of turnover in the team, which does not help when you're trying to get a consistent message out there. And, this feels like Overwatch maybe 1.2, 1.5, maybe.
I would say it feels to me like the Burning Crusade of Overwatch.
Probably right. I mean, they've changed team compositions. They're adding new heroes and revising old heroes. They're doing a lot of stuff, but it doesn't feel like a new game.
All right. At this point, I think I am going to move us over back to Wrath, though. Wrath Classic went live yesterday. Oh, you got something else? Because I just read the Defense Matrix thing, but I don't know how to explain it because I just read it.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, Defense Matrix is... You got something, Jeff?
I got this. Defense Matrix is their new attempt at trying to figure out a way to combat toxicity in Overwatch, which has been a chief complaint since Overwatch first released. Other games do it differently, whether they have an anti-cheat system or they have a reporting system where they actually have a review. Some folks that are maybe old hands at the player-driven behavioral tribunals. Remember, Riot used to do this with League of Legends before moving to a purely internal review process. But what they're doing is, with Overwatch 2 coming, they're trying to put multiple systems in place to combat that toxic behavior and give players a better experience. It is a noble endeavor, but I have concerns. They have the SMS project, which is an additional layer of security. Basically, it's a two-layer authentication over SMS. It basically makes it more difficult for people to get back into the game after they've been suspended, because now you are tied to other data. It's essentially trying to make sure that people don't get permanently banned and then create new accounts and get back in, which is the thing that happened. There was a whole big controversy a few years ago with a pro that happened to. They're trying to leverage machine learning in audio transcription. This is where I might have some comments. Basically, what's going to wind up happening is they are going to they take some of the audio data from the in-game voice chat, as well as limited recording, and apply machine learning to make transcripts of that, so that when a player is reported, they can go back and take a look at it to see if there is a case of cheating or disruptive text chat. They're trying to leverage multiple systems with the in-game reports, trying to use that machine learning to identify the behaviors as they're happening, and move forward. My only problem with that is, if you've ever tried to dictate to your phone or your computer or any piece of software and have it transcribe what you're going to say, you understand that it doesn't always hit 100% accuracy. Now, I understand that they are also devoting a lot of money and time to it, so I'm curious how it's going to work. But I also don't know how that system is going to handle it, because they're also still relying on players reporting this behavior to trigger the process to sort of get up front. We've seen in the past systems like this where players have abused that reporting. We saw this when WoW started doing it way back when. We saw this in Heroes of the Storm. We saw this in a bunch of other games throughout the history of video game timelines, where bad actors will leverage that system, that reporting, to try to skew the data. So I'm curious how that's going to work. And the other part of it is working on the first time user experience, which is trying to figure out how to welcome players into the basically the environment of Overwatch 2, and allow them to give consistent feedback and help shepherd them along their way. It's an interesting, and there's more to it than that, but that's sort of like the basic overhaul or the basic overview. If it works, it'll be great. If it doesn't, it'll be interesting. There you go. That's the 30,000 foot view of it.
All right. And then we'll jump over to Wrath, because as we pointed out, Wrath Classic came out yesterday. So today has been the first full day of people playing it. I honestly, the fact that phase one for Wrath is also starting in like on October 6th, which is like 2 days after Overwatch 2 launches, feels like somebody at Blizzard just wants to try and stress test their whole network. Let's see what happens. But yeah, phase one, which is Noxramas, Eye of Eternity, the Obsidian Sanctum, and the Vault of Archivon raids will all go live. Currently, like, the original dungeons are already live. I had to write a post about dungeons today. I didn't have to.
It was, you could have not, but I appreciate that you did it. It was a good post.
But my point is just that there are a lot of dungeons in,
so
in
many.
Wrath of the Lich King. I had not realized there were like 16 of them. And nine raids.
Five-person content was all the rage back then.
Yeah, so 16 dungeons and nine raids, but one of those raids doesn't necessarily count and will not necessarily be coming out in Wrath Classic, because eight of those raids were the various Wrath content raids. One of them was Onyxia's Lair got a level 80 version. And I don't know. There's been no word on whether or not they're going to be bringing that out. I mean, I even asked on the forums and nobody has responded. So yeah, don't know if that one's coming, but if it does come, quite frankly, it's still in Dustwallow Marsh. It didn't move it to Northrend. It's just in Dustwallow Marsh. If you need to find it, just go to Dustwallow Marsh.
The problem I always had with Wrath Dungeons, and I played in Wrath, I've done these dungeons, so I've probably done Wrath Dungeons more times than I've done any dungeons released since Wrath, because that was it. I was there, I was doing dungeons, and that was like the thing. But even I consistently get confused about where to find them, because Wrath had this thing where it would have a bunch of dungeons and raids all in the exact same place.
Well, I think that's because of how popular Oceandown was. And they actually did that twice in BC that I can think of. There was the Hellfire Ramparts type. There were like three dungeons there plus a boss, like a raid boss. And then Aushendun had like three wings. And I think they liked that and wanted to do it forward, but they wanted to break it up a bit. So you had Utgard Keep, where I'm positive that Utgard Pinnacle was going to be a raid. I'm positive I read that somewhere. And then there was, I think, the Eye of Eternity, which had Nexus, Oculus, and then the Eye of Eternity raid. Asdrill Nerub, the hardest dungeon to find the entrances on in the history of World of Warcraft.
Yep.
I will not be taking questions at this time. Like, seriously, oh my god. But, you know, that one with Asdrill Nerub and Ankhetet, it was actually easier for me as a player to simply run Asdrill Nerub and then just go into Ankhetet directly from it, because there was an entrance to Ankhetet at the end of Asdrill Nerub. So I just, that's what I did. I'm trying to think of like what other ones had multiple, like, I don't think you can say that like Draktharan Keep and Gold and Gundrak weren't
in the same place.
They were pretty far apart, but they felt thematically connected.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was very, very far apart.
Halls of Lightning and Halls of Stone. I mean, they're apart, right, but it's like, okay, one's on the left and one's on the right. See, that's the problem I always have. Okay, which one's the left? Which one's the right? The I'm going to go left, and then, now I need to fly back to the right.
The only reason I ever remembered is because the flight point was closest to Halls of Lightning.
Ah.
And so if you went to Halls of Lightning from the flight point, that's just right there. It's right next to it, whereas Halls of Stone are all the way over there.
I'm in Liz's camp. I'm not going to lie. Even with that tidbit, I'm going to forget.
Oh yeah, of course you are. But then they put out all those dungeons to start with, like a bunch of dungeons first when the game launched. But then they put in a new dungeon alongside Trial of the Crusader, and they named that dungeon Trial of the Champion. And they put the doors like kitty corner to each other, so the door
one's on the opposite side, isn't it?
No, the Trial of the Champion doors at 3 o'clock. And the Trial of the Crusader doors at 6 o'clock. If this thing were a 12-hour clock, so it's not exactly opposite. It's off to the right. I mean, the only way I could ever figure out which one was which was I always looked for the vendors, because the one that's the raid has the vendors, and the one that's not the raid is off on the corner and has nothing. Just that's this door in the corner. It's the only one you can go into on that side. But that's like they're named so close. We're going to go do trial. Which one? Crusader. The one with like four different difficulty modes. And then Ice Crown. They put in Ice Crown Citadel and three dungeons. But at least all three dungeons, at least the entrance to all three dungeons was in the same room. So you just had to find that room.
Yeah, that could have been worse. Terrible. They could have put a maze of twisty little passages under Ice Crown Citadel that you had to go down different ones. I mean, that could have been something they did, but they didn't. Thank goodness.
Oh, I've got Ruby Sanctum.
Yeah, Ruby Sanctum.
Those are reasonably easy to find, but the problem is they're like under Wormrest Temple, and they're like if you go into the temple looking for the dungeons because they're in Wormrest Temple, it's like no, there's no way down from here, and you'll wander around.
Yeah, and they didn't have that thing yet that put a little arrow up or down on the map so you knew it was below you or above you. So I remember just going around and around and around in circles like a madman, just desperately trying to find it till I fell off the side and luckily fell off the side at the giant crack. So I died, but I died in front of the chamber with the raid so I could go get my corpse and then like, oh, there's the raid.
I mean, I also wonder if that's part of the, like, it feels like the vanilla WoW experience, the earlier game experience, like part of the charm maybe was not knowing your way around and having to go look for things and find things. And on one hand, I'll say yes, like the exploration aspect is always fun, but it's like fun the first time. And it's not fun when I'm like trying to go back to Asdrill Nerub. Am I saying that right? The spider probably. Thing. The Close spider enough. Thing.
The nope zone.
I'm going back for the second time and I'm like running around in circles for 20 minutes because I can't find the end of the maze of twisty little passages.
Or if you do find the end of it, it's the wrong dungeon.
It's the wrong side.
Yeah.
You've gone to the wrong end. You need to go back to the other end and get lost 5 times on your way.
But I mean, I'll be upfront with you. I had that experience today because I was going to start playing WoW again. Like full time, like actually really get back into it to get ready for Dragonflight. And so I was getting one of my alts who I'm going to make my main through all the stuff to get up to Xerath Mortis. And so I'm doing the quest with Sylvanas, like where she's attacking Ardenweald. And I couldn't, like, I got completely lost, couldn't find my way up to where she was. And I kept having that guy fly in and grab me and fly me back. And I'm like, no, stop doing this. He's right there. I just have to get there somehow. So, yeah, I was not loving that. I still don't like that aspect of World of Warcraft all these years later. But we actually, Ted did a really good post basically covering like encounters people liked and don't like. We have a question about that too, though. So I'm going to save it for the questions because we got a half an hour and we can actually get to some questions. So,
whoa, questions? What even are those?
Let's find out. A pile of secrets, throwing a wine glass.
Well, yeah, that's true.
That's right. Joe has to do everything in the Dracula voice now. to get into things, though, I'm going to tell you all that you can get us your questions by sending to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast of Blizzard Watch so we know it's for the show. Or you can use our Discord. We've got two channels on Discord. One is for patrons because you guys help us keep doing all this stuff and we really appreciate it. The Patron Q and Podcast Questions channel for your questions. Got about four from there today, so yay. And there's also the Q and Podcast Questions channel for non-patrons, which is still appreciated. We love you guys. We're just really loving people. Ordinarily, I force Joe and Liz to get into some kind of thing about this, but I have an eye appointment like in 2 days, so I'm going to try and read these myself to see how good or bad I can do here.
Okay.
So here we go. Emails and questions. This first one is from Ryerbread, a balanced druid from Adiesh. Now that Wrath Classic is out, is there any quest lines you recommend doing to the lore impact or just good story? Liz doesn't really care that much about lore, but I'm going to try and get her to answer this anyway because I am stubborn.
Wrathgate.
There we go. She's got a question. Yes. Awesome. Now tell them why.
I mean, Wrathgate was really the first time you had like a big in-game cinematic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we didn't. And you're just wandering through the game world. You're working on this quest. And yeah, the quest seems really interesting and like a big storyline. And today you're trundling along, quest. And you get to the end of the quest chain. And there's a cinematic. And it's amazing. And you did not expect it because it had never happened before. And it was a mind-blowing experience because you were given this like super awesome thing that was just wow. No, it was just like the first time you saw that sort of storytelling in World of Warcraft. And it was of course the problem is now we've all been playing Warcraft for a long time now. We're all used to the modern way of doing things. And even if you didn't know about that, now you know, because I just said it, because it's, you know, like 15 years old now and it's not really a secret. It's like you can't go back and have that first experience.
Yeah, that's true enough. But I will also say that it's also the first time that we had something very similar to a scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we didn't really have that kind of thing before where you would show up and, like, kind of go into the city with a bunch of other people and experience like fighting through like this. It really felt like invading a city full of demons and monsters to get to, you know, it there. And both the Horde and Alliance had their own unique storylines inside of it, which was really it was a first. It was something that we hadn't really seen before. So yeah, I honestly, I think that was a really good one.
Wasn't that later? Like, you did the quest line Dragonblight, and then later there was the thing with going into Undercity.
They sent you literally from the end of the Dragonblight stuff, they sent you back to either Orgrimmar or Stormwind. If you went to Stormwind, you basically brought Bolvar's shield to Varian, who was like, he started getting all, I hate the Horde because they killed my friend. And meanwhile, over on the Horde side, you'd show up and be like, yeah, so Sorfang's kid's dead. And everything's messed up, and yeah, it's not good. And Sylvanas would then swan in and go, oh, by the way, I got kicked out of Undercity.
It's been a while. It's been a while, and I'm
You can't even play it anymore in the real games. So, yeah,
I kind of don't want to go back into Wrath Classic, and I kind of do want to go back into Wrath Classic because I have so many memories, and I'd like to replay all of it. But also, it's it's hard to find the time.
Yeah, I've not been getting a lot of sleep lately, quite frankly, and I don't need to get less.
And of course, I still need to play Cyberpunk 2077. How am I supposed to fit all this into a busy day?
Yeah, it is not fair.
Just take the red pills. It's fine.
Anyway, Joe.
So Verdigris mentioned it in chat, but it was going to be my pick anyway, is the Crusader Brittenbrand quest line, basically. It starts with a Tale of Valor and goes all the way through the Light Within the Darkness. And this is the one where the Crusader Brittenbrand, who basically exists only in this moment, he exists for this quest line and nowhere else. But it follows the story of this crusader who fought alongside Tyrion Fordring, who finds out he is infected with the Plague of Undeath. To avoid spreading it further, he winds up disappearing into the mountains of Northrend, where, you know, Tyrion sends the heroes to go find him. And then when we discover what happened to him, we go on this quest throughout all of these different zones, talking to all of these different NPCs, trying to find a cure for him. And there's a lot of places you go, and there's a lot of people you talk with that it just makes this really kind of broad. Like, there's one where you talk about, you know, getting some stuff from the Emerald Nightmare and go to a Grove Keeper. You talk with Remulos. You talk to different aspects about it. You get a boon from Alexstrasza. You talk to the Naru, in particularly Adal. And you go through this whole large epic journey to save one crusader. And it was just, in my opinion, one of the most well-done quests and one of the most well-done things, because not only was it just good, but it also opened up questions about the light, because at the end of it, and mild spoilers for the quest that's been out, whenever Northrend released, was that he couldn't be saved. The plague couldn't be cured, at least not at that time. And as a result, the only option was to raise him in the light and have the Naru carry him to the light, which is the first time we had ever, one, seen that happen. And two, we had always assumed that up until this point, the plague could be cured. Now that Shadowlands is out, that's a little bit different. But back then, it put a lot of things in perspective for players and tied the line between hope and despair really, really tightly. So one of the best quests available in Wrath of the Lich King, as far as I'm concerned.
Cool. All right. For the one I'm going to mention, it's a weird little one that I don't know if the Horde gets access to anything like it. And in fact, I'm pretty sure they don't. So maybe play Alliance just so you can pick this one up. In Valgard, when you get to Howling Fjord, there's a Draenei shaman who's like, I want to know, there's weird stuff about shamanism in this area. The spirits are all messed up. And as a shaman, it's very important to me that we go and figure this out. So he sends you to go forth into the area. But he's like, whatever you do, don't get too close. If you go into the spirit world with this thing I'm giving you, don't get too close to any of the Lich King's minions, because I don't know how they're going to affect it. And you do. Well, you can. If you do, you like, when you're there, you actually see the Lich King wandering around the area. And you can go up to him. You shouldn't, but you can. If you do, he grabs you in this bubble of pure necromantic force and like comes up to you and he goes, I smell shaman magic on you. I was a shaman once. Now, Arthas Menethil was never a shaman.
But Ner'zhul
was.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this neat little nod to the origin of the Lich King. And then he pops you like a grape and you die horribly. And I assume he just saunters off. And then when you come back to the shaman guy afterwards, if that's happening, he's like, what happened? I told you not to go near any of them. And you're like, yeah, my bad. I just had to go see the Lich King. Sorry. It's a nice little quest. It's not as good as the ones that Joe or Liz are talking about. That doesn't have the huge feel to it, but I always liked it, 'cause it's just this quiet little moment of remembering these characters and this little thing about them. The fact that Ner'zhul, who so rarely gets mentioned when talking about the Lich King nowadays, actually gets a reminder to people. Yeah, no, I'm here too. It isn't all the blonde pretty boy. It's also the orc. I am also in here. So yeah, that's one of the ones I really like. Anything else for you guys before we move on to the next one?
Honestly, Wrath just in general marked an uptick in storytelling. Because like up until that point, like you had Vanilla, which was, for all of the good memories we have of it, was very disjointed in its storytelling. Burning Crusade had a cohesive line and started kind of, you know, trying to get to that level, but a lot of its stuff was still disjointed and done in pockets. Wrath was one of the first times where you had large storylines that felt all interconnected, even if you didn't see it right away. And all of the zones kind of fed into the narrative. And it was sort of like the birthplace of what we have now throughout the expansions, where everything has sort of the duality of storytelling and the undercurrents going. So there is no wrong answer here. Just all of the quests in Wrath are there's good ones, and you know, even you can avoid the poop quests, but you know, whatever. But it really did mark a turn in storytelling and questing in general.
All right. Next one is from Kerfuffle. I'm pretty sure I'm getting that one right. Kerfuffle of Drakthul. Greetings, Watchers. Reflecting on the reaction to polling for Cataclysm Classic, I keep returning to how differently the EverQuest community conceptualizes their version of the experience. Progression servers, the framing is less about creating a museum piece and instead experiencing the release as current content. A new progression server opens periodically and players work together through the expansions as they are unlocked. Sometimes there are even rule sets or loot table changes for a variation of the experience while trying something different. What would you think about something like that for Warcraft? Thank you for your time, Kerfuffle. I'm going to just say up front, I think that's what they're doing now. I think they've certainly moved a lot closer to it. I'm going to let Liz and Joe talk, but I think that I'd say that they're at least that's somewhat of the approach now. What do you guys think?
Well, they've only done the one Season of Mastery. I do think Season of Mastery leans in this direction, but they've only done it once, and it was only with vanilla content. So I'm interested to see where they take Season of Mastery next. And if they will make, are they going to make a Burning Crusade Season of Mastery? Are they going to make a Wrath Season of Mastery? Are they going to make an Everything Season of Mastery where you can play from vanilla all the way up to present day? Maybe at a slightly accelerated pace, because otherwise that's a while. So they certainly have the germ of an idea. They have this little bit of the first bit of an idea, and I'd like to see them continue it and do stuff like that.
Joe?
I am very much in the same camp as Liz. I think that the Season of Mastery is going to essentially, I think, try to be their version of it. However, that said, depending on where they stop doing the classics, you know, if they go to Cataclysm Classic, or if they don't, because at that point the world completely changes, and part of the push for classic servers was, you know, you can't go back to the old world anymore because of Cataclysm. I wouldn't mind seeing progression servers where players could, you know, periodically have everything rolled back to basics and play through everything again, because that's one of the things with MMOs, and in particular WoW, probably more than almost any other MMO out there, is we have 20 years of consistent building and running, right? Where the game hasn't really had to worry about refreshing itself or starting over again, because every expansion marks something new and the game keeps marching forward, at least for now. But with Classic, like the idea of saying, okay, well, I've reached the end of where Classic ends. We've done everything we can. I want to start clean again. And you could roll an alt, but it's not the same as, you know, starting over from like day one, quote unquote, even though it's not really day one, but whatever. And then moving forward with your group of friends as you progress through, you know, the content, the questing and everything, and then go through the unlocks again and go through the major events again. I think there is something to be said for maybe that in the future. So
I was focusing more on the idea of that there are even rules or loot table changes for a variation of the experience. I think you're definitely seeing that with Wrath Classic, mm-hmm. where they're straight up not bringing in things that were there before. They're bringing in new stuff like the Heroic Plus dungeons.
Oh, for sure.
So I think there's kind of movement in that direction. But one of the things that just occurred to me as you guys were talking, and I'm going to throw this at you guys and see what you think. Imagine if they started an entirely new server, Wrath Classic, and it's just 1-60 Wrath, but it starts there, and it continually updates, goes to Burning Crusade, goes to Wrath, but those things aren't unlocked at first. So when you get to level 60, that's end game for a while. You play on that for like a few months, and then it segues in the next expansion, like Burning Crusade. You play that, you get to level 70, that's end game for a while. And then it segues in Wrath, and then you get to level 80 and you play it, and that's endgame for a while, and then they drop Cataclysm. and everybody has to suddenly have the completely new world, and their stuff is different, and they play Cataclysm for a while till they get to level 90. Or was it 85? I think it was 85.
I forget.
Whichever one it was, then you'd get Mists of Pandaria, and you'd everything, you know, and just go all the way through to actually catching up to now, because Liz said something like that, and I was thinking to myself, what if they actually did that? What if they did every WoW expansion over the course of, say, like 5 years?
Like, I mean, I thought that was what we were talking about, because that's what EverQuest
does. Yeah, that's what progression servers are. But
Lord of the Rings Online does that too. They have and Lord of the Rings Online has like about a million different expansions.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
So is that something you'd actually want to play?
I don't know, but it's really interesting. I think if they took it with a Season of Mastery approach and maybe tweaked it or at least sped it up a little bit, that could be really interesting. I'm not opposed to the idea of a Cataclysm Classic. I think it's an interesting idea because, like you were just saying, that they've changed Wrath. They've changed Wrath to keep the classic feel. So it's not an authentic Wrath server. This is not what we got when we played Wrath. It's Wrath, but they're making it feel like a classic experience. For example, by not adding the group finder, so you can't just click a button and just be in a group immediately. You still have that social element that's a big part of the game, like we had in Vanilla and Burning Crusade. So what if we got a version of Cataclysm that tried to keep the feeling of Classic, that didn't have its group finder, that focused on social experiences that maybe didn't update the talent trees the way they were updated? You know, what if that was the kind of overhaul we got with a Cataclysm Classic? Would y'all play that?
I don't know, because I the Cataclysm dungeons, they were really hard for me when I first went into them. Like when Cataclysm dropped, running those dungeons was painful. They were tuned in a way that was just, it was not pleasant. And the idea of adding, having to wait in like Orgrimmar for like 4 hours to get a freaking Grim Batal run, and then people drop out and I have to wait, like someone has to go back to Orgrimmar and we have to wait to get it's like, oh my God, Grim Batal's already a pain. Why are you doing this to me, World of Warcraft? So I don't know.
That kind of sounds like running Upper Blackrock Spire in vanilla.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think for now we're going to move on because there are other questions that I want to get to a couple of them if possible. This one's from Easy Target, who's a longtime friend of the show. Hi, Watchers. What other ARPGs have you played other than the Diablo series? What ARPGs would you like to see? Dark Sun? Easy Target, Grognard for Life. Which one of you wants to go?
I don't have an opinion here. I don't really play any other ARPGs than Diablo. Joe?
So Hades is up there as far as ARPG roguelikes. It is a very, very good ARPG. I really like it. We could talk about Grim Dawn, which is a game that most people forgot existed for a long time, but is out there. One that I really enjoyed for a very, very long time that fell under everybody's radar as well was Victor Vron, which is essentially a vampire hunting, monster hunting ARPG, which had a expansion that was completely a crossover with Motorhead, which had Lemmy doing your voiceover acting and was an NPC that you could interact with at the bar at the end of the world, and had a very heavy metal theme with it, which I super enjoyed. Also, Lloyd Kaufman was an NPC. He was the bartender, which was absolutely wonderful. The Torchlight series before they went off the deep end is also really, really good. I have not played Torchlight 3, so I can't really speak to that one, but 1 and 2 I really enjoyed. And then Warhammer Chaosbane owned my life for quite a while, because it was, you know, all of the wonderful stuff of Warhammer Fantasy in an ARPG format. And let me play as a dwarf slayer berserker, which super, super, super fun. Two other ones that I will throw out there as honorable mentions. Darksiders 3 was an The Darksiders Genesis.
I wish you hadn't mentioned it, because it was going to be the one I talked about.
Sorry. I'll let Matt talk about that one, but I enjoyed that one as well. And believe it or not, one that I enjoyed that I didn't think I was going to was the Minecraft Dungeons one. I played it on a lark at the beginning of the year because I literally had nothing else to play. And I was in this weird, I don't know, whatever. And it showed up on Game Pass. And I was just like, whatever. I'll download it and play it. It cost me $0 because I'm already paying for the Game Pass. Let's give it a try. And it was surprisingly entertaining. Having actual structured Minecraft loot drops in a dungeon format. Okay, I'll take it. All right, those are all the ARPGs that I've played and some that I continue to play. Matt.
Well, I mean, there's the Path of Exile series, which I think you kind of have to know about, even if you don't like it. I've played both of those. Well, I've played 1 and 2. I don't think two hasn't actually really come out. I think I've played the beta for it. I'm not sure how that worked, but I know I've played Path of Exile 1 and I liked it. Okay. There's Walsen, which I feel like Walsen started to do what a lot of them do, and that it tried to be even more Diablo than Diablo.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, guys, you sound like a dude cookie monstering his way through a song. Just relax a little bit. It feels like you're straining to get this game out and someone's knocking on the bathroom stall going, hey, how much longer are you going to be in there with Walsen? I'm not saying Walsen was bad, because that metaphor sounded like I'm saying that, but there's a lot of to it that I feel like it doesn't need to be there. And that's one of the reasons I was going to mention Darksiders Genesis, because Darksiders Genesis is one of the most surprisingly fun and funny ARPGs I've played. The comedy is all just in the character discussions. It's not the game itself. The game itself is not funny, but the characters are funny. Strife and War are both funny in the way that they interact. And I don't really like the Darksiders series. Like, I don't hate it. I don't like it. It's just there. Darksiders 3 got really odd, and I'm not sure what it was going for. But Darksiders Genesis is actually, it's really entertaining. It's really good. When I wasn't playing Diablo 3, it became like my go-to ARPG. There's also Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance and Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance 2.
And the Marvel series both, of those versions, too.
Yeah.
Marvel has
series. Those are both ARPGs, and they're both really good. I liked both of them. And of course, the whole point of this is not to talk about Diablo, but I really want to. I think in general, the ARPG genre is one I like, and I like playing stuff in it. But there is this unfortunate tendency for everybody to try to do Diablo 2 over and over and over again. That's my problem with Torchlight.
Yeah.
To the point where they just recently hired David Brevik to be...
Well, considering that Torchlight was made by the people that were essentially Blizzard North.
Yeah, I know.
So.
But when you actually go and hire David Brevik to be your consultant on the new Torchlight thing, at this point you're taking the mask off. But that's fine. I think honestly, if this point owning it would be better. And I think it would be interesting. I also feel like there was Hellgate London.
Hellgate London wasn't really an ARPG. It was a weird in-between of like MMO plus ARPG plus traditional RPG plus
first-person
shooter. Don't get me wrong. I loved Hellgate London. And I wish I was actually just thinking as we were talking about this, I was like, you know, it would be really great if they would bring back as a, an ARPG instead of what they originally would. Hellgate London. so, yeah.
But yeah, I think that basically answers that. We got 5 minutes. Do you guys think we can answer Trauma's question, or I'm going to move on to this one because I feel like we can do it relatively quickly. This one's from Gassel. If one spec or more specs was going to be removed from WoW, what spec should it be? Demon Hunter has proved it's reasonable to have only 2 specs for a class and seems to result in well-focused class themes. Should we even have 3 DPS specs in one class? Feel free, this is a topic, feels like a topic that folks could have opinions about and might drive engagement. My personal answer is that I think one of the rogue specs should go away or be converted to mid-range thrown damage. Arcane Mage should just be the spells that Fire and Frost share and not its own spec, and the Demonology Warlock should be made a melee DPS / tank class. So I'm going to throw that out to you guys. My answer, by the way, it will surprise people, but...
And Barbarians of the Warrior class?
Liz. Nope, that's not it. Liz.
I feel like with the triple DPS specs, you do get some blurriness, and Rogue does feel like a particular one because it's like you have 3 different specs and they all do melee DPS. And okay, I haven't seriously played a Rogue in a while, but this is a hard thing to get differentiation on. If you go to a class like Shaman, you have a melee DPS spec, you have a magical ranged DPS spec, and you have a healing spec. So each of those has a really clear definition. I don't think it's a problem to have 3 specs, or as we see with Druids, 4, but you really need to draw some lines between them. I think the bigger problem would be if you remove specs and you say, okay, everyone has two specs now. That's going to be rough. That's going to be rough because you've got players that's like, oh, this is my spec. This is what I do. I wonder if it would be something that would be easier to do with the new talent tree system, because you could build it in a way where it's like, okay, we have feral druids and guardian druids. You just take a path on this side that focuses on this. You take a path on this side that focuses on that. But now that they've already built the trees as they have with like solid focus on one spec, I think it's just hard to roll back.
Joe?
So I personally think that Drakthyr are giving us a really good example of how you can make a variety to ranged class, because I think Rogue is a really good example of melee and all being, I don't want to say the same because I know they play differently, but sort of in the same wavelength, they're all doing melee damage like Liz pointed out. Then you have, let's do mages. They're all ranged DPS. That's all they do. It doesn't matter what spec you are. That's what they do. Introducing a variation to that where maybe a melee class can be move out to a middle range and maybe a ranged class can move to a middle range gives you a little more, I want to say playing depth because that sounds redundant, but it changes it up enough that you have to play differently. That's one thing that playing around in the beta and the alpha with the Drakthyr has really proven to me is that mid-range is a completely different mindset. Like playing a hunter for so long, being at long range, I can mow things down before they even become a threat to me. And Drakthyr, regardless of how powerful they are right now, you can have stuff on you rather quickly. So it focuses more on your movement factor and you know, utilizing your movement abilities in combination with your DPS. I think maybe doing that with some of the classes that have only one real function would vary things up a bit. The other thing that I'm going to say might be an unpopular opinion, and I can hear at least one member of our guild, possibly two, will have very choice words for me. I wouldn't mind seeing marksman remain a long range spec for hunters, survival being melee and short range, and then moving beast mastery to a middle range spec as you are like interacting with your, you know, your pet while you're in combat. I would like to see something like that maybe for those classes to add more variety. Because usually my argument with all of the hunter stuff before they introduced like melee hunters was it all feels the same, right? It was boring. It didn't really matter what I played because I was using mostly the same skills or, you know, maybe a variation on there. But I think looking at that middle range as maybe a place to explore with the classes and specs, I think it'd be fun.
Well, and Matt mentioned the idea of a tanking warlock, and that's just really interesting.
Take it back to its OG roots, yeah.
Yeah, back in vanilla, it wasn't
Leotheris.
I had seen warlocks tank other raid bosses, and it's like you had to have your raid group on board with the idea, but I've seen it happen.
Yeah, but it was actually even the guilds that didn't want to do it had to do it.
Yeah, it was the mechanic you had to use. And so it's an interesting concept to have a tanky warlock. And it would be interesting if you gave more, just give more specs variety. Give Rogue a ranged spec maybe and focus on that. You know, there are all sorts of options. And sometimes with those single role specs, you kind of get locked in. Like, particularly when it comes to, you know, queuing for stuff, it's like, okay, you are always going to have the longest queue because you're pure DPS, whereas you could go healer or tank and you have really fast queues. And I know when I queue for things, every time I'm a healer, I know how to use my DPS abilities, but I'm not going to bother. It's something that unlocks options, and having more options is pretty great.
So here's the thing I'm going to say that's going to make people drop their pearls and gasp. Remove Fury Ward.
You've said this before.
But also remove Outlaw/Combat Rogues. Take Fury Warriors and Outlaw/Combat Rogues and make them one class.
Swashbuckler?
No. The class would still be the Barbarian, Joe. You knew I was coming here. But the thing is that thematically speaking, Conan the Barbarian, who is the character who has inspired the fictional barbarian of video games and so forth, he's not like an actual barbarian person. you know, because that in and of itself is a Greek slur against people who weren't Greek. It's the reason the Berber people are named the Berber people, because Byzantine Greeks were calling them barbarians because they didn't speak Greek. It's racist. So go ahead with the fictionalized version, but he was a thief. And I don't think a lot of people forget that. He was a thief who was just big and liked to hit things. But he was a thief. He snuck into places and stole things. So make that a character. You let people, you know, the combat slash outlaw rogue brings the single-minded fury type gameplay that people want, but with, you know, combo points and so forth. It changes it up. It would allow for that sort of combat ability, and it would even broaden it out with the ability to use different weapons. So it wasn't always the same kind of weapons. The Fury Warrior aspect would be the two big weapons. It would mean that warriors no longer had that. They no longer used two-handed weapons. That would be something that the other new class did, and the warriors would basically all be about weapon discipline again, which is something that both ARMS and Prot have in common. Now, do I like this idea? No, I actually don't. I like the warrior class as it is at this point. I've thought about it a lot, and I think the problem is that ultimately you guys are talking about how, you know, all three rogue specs and all three mage specs are basically doing the same thing. Even if they're doing it differently, it's still the exact same role. And that's the problem, like, ARMS warriors have. Like, ARMS warriors and Fury warriors are both still hitting things. Like, what's the difference? There is a difference. It's mechanically different, but it isn't, you know, in its heart, it is still basically the same thing. This is the same problem I have with playing a priest, where, yeah, sure, discipline and holy are very different, but it's still a healer, you know? And it still feels sometimes like, you know, why can't we actually have a tanking priest? Like, imagine if discipline was a tanking spec. You could totally make it one, make the bubble stuff all about, like, that's your cooldown now. They'd have spells that gave them, like, divine resistance, so they don't need plate armor, because they're literally just calling down the power of their gods to, like, you know, stand up and stay in combat. There's a lot of room for stuff. Like, I've always wanted the healing warrior. Like, it's a joke, but at the same time, it would be really cool if I could just yell people back to health. Like, in all sincerity, they were giving battle reses out in this expansion in Dragonflight, and they gave it to the paladin. I'm like, no, give it to the warrior. The warrior would literally turn around and just yell, "Get up, you gold brick!" And they'd get up because, you know, oh, that was a very loud yell. It woke me, you know, from death? Yeah, apparently. Like, I feel like there's room for more of this kind of exploration of stuff. There's room for more, like, fun to be had with specs. I thought it was really a shame that survival kind of went from the Legion version of it, which was straight up just melee. And then they put bow stuff back into it. I was like, no, it should just be melee. Just let it be melee. Don't make it a hybrid. Just let it be the spec for people who want to hit things with a stick, but have a dog. I want to have a dog while I hit things with a stick. If like having survival is such a problem in the hunter, go ahead, throw that on the barbarian idea. That can be the third spec. You guys can all get rid of all these weird specs that don't make sense in the class. Now you've got the dude who's got his own bear friend who sneaks into buildings and steal things and hits you with two giant axes. Perfect. Now I actually like the idea again. We can call them the bear having stick hitters. But yeah.
It's to the point.
Yeah. But in all sincerity, I don't necessarily want to. Liz is completely right that you don't want to tell somebody who's been playing, like, as an example, an arcane mage for like 10 years, sorry, you know, your spec's gone. I hope you like Frost. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to do that. I wouldn't want to do that to, like, to anybody. Like, imagine if paladins woke up one day and they didn't have Rhett anymore. Even if you, like, someone like Liz who doesn't play Rhett, it's still annoying to have, like, a major part of your class removed. You know what I mean? Like, even you might want to pick it up someday and give it a shot and see if it's good now. Now you can't.
There are those people who play Rhett Paladins. What do you do if you say, like, okay, Rhett Paladins no longer exist, have fun? It's you're denying someone their class fantasy that they've had, you know, for like 18 years now, potentially.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can pull that thread.
Yeah. Joe, anything else before we move on?
Nope.
All right. I think that's going to cover it, though, because we're kind of 7 minutes over. So I'm going to have Joe do his spiel, and then I'll do the last thing if there's a roundup.
All right. Well, Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast lighting community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ad-free site experience.
Thank you very much, Joe. Again, guys, if you have a question for the show, please send it to podcast@blizzardwatch.com with the subject line podcast or Blizzard Watch, so we know it's for this show. Because quite frankly, at this point, we're all tired and frantic and frazzled, and I don't want to have to try and argue with Joe over who gets what. It's just, you know, he comes up with these elaborate games of death where we have to go into a maze and there's people lurking in the maze with masks and they come out and boo you.
You told me you liked it.
I like it, but it's a lot of work. Just a lot of work, Joe.
What y'all should do to see who gets which questions, you should go down and try to find Azjul Narub, and whoever finds it first, you get the question.
I want to see Joe again sometime, Liz. Either he's going to vanish forever or I'm going to vanish forever. And either way, I won't see him again. But yes, this has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. Liz coming up with like Saw movie worthy, horrible things to do to us. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We'll be here next week. I hope. I'm not going down to Azjul Narub. I'll tell you that much. Take care, everybody. You guys can say goodbye.
Now that we've said this, I think we have to do it. We have to have like the race to Azjul Narub, I think.
No,
there's no race. Such a big no, deal. No.
We've made such a big deal about it.
What, Joe? Go ahead.
No. No racing to Azjul Narub. I never
saying worse.
I never remember where the hell that hole is. I never do.
I thought he was going to be like, first you have to race to Azjul Narub, then you have to go to the Oculus and figure out how to do the flying thing. And like, and then what? Do you like, I trap myself in a Tatacomb for 100 years? Screaming, Montressor, for the love of God, Montressor. Anyway, this has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. Take it easy, everybody.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.